We welcome you all this morning where we are gathered together as a community. This is a special service in a number of different ways. First of all, our Mystic Grove Pagan Group is putting on this service as a celebration and honoring of the summer solstice just this past week. And we also want to honor the 30 or so members of the First Unitarian Church of Orlando and our minister, the Reverend Kathy Schmitz, who are up in Charlotte, North Carolina this week for the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association. From what I hear, they're having a fantastic time. They were able to be witness of the state of New York being offering marriage rights to gays and lesbians, which I guess was quite a event and celebration there. Yes. Yes. Amen, and may it be so in all states soon. And also, yesterday they passed a statement of conscience on ethical eating. So that and all kinds of experiments in democracy and other fun games. So we are glad to have you all here with us.
Good morning, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Samuel Engel, and this is my first time ever lighting the chalice at 1U, or First Unitarian, as it was once known. Now, before I get to play a fire, I want to talk about the interesting subject of immigration. About 2 weeks ago, this church's Immigration Covenant Group, of which I was part, concluded its six-part workshop series. These workshops were conducted in the Sharon Hyatt Library on the evening of the second Tuesday of the month from February to June of this year. For the uninitiated, immigration as a moral issue was chosen as the 2010 to 2014 Congregational Study / Action Issue, CSAI for short, at the 2010 General Assembly in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You may also wonder why I chose to get involved with this complex and fascinating subject. Well, some 18 years ago, along with five siblings and my parents, I emigrated to the United States from the West Indies. Even though the current immigration debate generally centers around the undocumented, my getting involved was very much an attempt to reconnect with the reasons why my immediate family and I left the tropics in the first place. In the process, I also learned a great deal about the intricacies of immigration. One of the main motivators why people all around the world have for so long left all behind to come to these shores is economic opportunity. Over the last two decades or so, we've all watched previously impoverished and marginalized nations join the ranks of the opulent and functional. Now, notwithstanding this wonderful progress, the United States remains a top destination for people seeking to improve their lives. So it would seem that rumors of the death of the American dream have been greatly exaggerated. Now, one of the first places which tend to spring to mind when people talk about immigration in the U.S. is Mexico. They are our neighbors to the south, and despite the fact that the world's richest person, Carlos Slim Helou, lives there, about 80% of Mexico's citizens live in poverty. Because of poor infrastructure, corruption, and a host of other reasons, the average Mexican worker in any profession will earn considerably less than his or her American counterpart. For those of you interested in comparing the wages of bank employees, for example, in the U.S. and Mexico, and how many hours they must each work in order to afford life's necessities and luxuries, feel free to track me down during social hour. My biggest takeaway from this workshop was how NAFTA has resoundingly failed to counteract the acute inequalities between the U.S. and Mexico. The North American Free Trade Agreement, to give it its full name, is a trilateral agreement between the governments of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and was enacted on January 1st of 1994, at a time when Congress was under Republican control. We were told that NAFTA would, in the long term, benefit the economies and workers of all three countries in question. More than anything, NAFTA has actually lent itself to predatory exploitation of Mexican workers in any given industry. In my estimation, trading blocs are meant to facilitate the movement of people, goods, and services between nations. NAFTA created a situation wherein Mexican workers fleeing poverty for economic opportunity in the U.S. end up taking one step forward to take two steps backwards in light of the deplorable working conditions, low wages, and other issues that they often face. Needless to say, the system needs to be overhauled, and major corporations have been the biggest winners. Now, being a part of this covenant group reminded me why I chose to join this organization or this denomination 2 years ago. Unitarian Universalism has long been at the forefront of every progressive social movement in this country, whether we're talking women's rights, civil rights, gay rights, the rights of the disabled, and so forth. I also understood that with the ever-accelerating force that is globalization, immigration reform must be one of the marquee progressive issues of the early 21st century. And as usual, Unitarian Universalism will probably take a very key protagonistic role. So if your summer travels should take you to places where you hear people complaining about illegal immigrants taking jobs from American workers, educate them on how these things, how things like NAFTA created this problem in the first place. A fair agreement between the three countries would see Mexico work its way towards prosperity. This would in turn stem things like outsourcing and afford American workers better wages and a semblance of certainty regarding their economic futures. Getting there is the hard part.
As Christine mentioned, this is a special service, so we're going to have some elements to the order of service that we don't normally have. The first of those is that we are going to cast a circle. In pagan terms, casting the circle is a way of bringing people together in a singular purpose, using the energy of your mind to bond and focus together. If this was a smaller space or a different shaped space, I might actually go around and draw a circle around us to help us feel that oneness and circling. Today, instead, we are going to do that with the power of our minds. So there are some words in your order of service. And as we say them together three times, I would like you to use your imagination to ring this sanctuary with a sphere of light to represent our bond and our common purpose in this moment. Hand to hand, we circle round. Mind and heart, we hallow this ground. Hand to hand, we circle round. Mind and heart, we hallow this ground. Hand to hand, we circle round. Mind to heart, we hallow this ground. As pagans, especially pagans who are trained in a Wiccan pagan kind of path, and if you want to know all the different kinds of possibilities of a pagan path, you can just corner us all in social hour and we'll tell you about just a teensy few of them. One of the things that you also do after casting a circle is to call upon the elements. Calling upon the elements represents calling upon all our powers in a balanced way. Earth, air, fire, and water represent the different sensations and talents and powers of our bodies and our minds and our spirits. So now we're going to have some people come up and call the elements for us.
Power of air, of free-flowing gases, kiss of breath, wind of reason, blow distractions from our busy minds.
Power of fire, of shimmering photons, dance of creation, flame of will, ignite our acceleration.
Power of water, of fluent liquids, tears of joy, watershed of feeling, cleanse our hearts.
Power of earth, the powerful solids, embrace of gravity, rock of confidence, bring balance to our bodies.
And now we are going to call upon all of those energies within ourselves by doing the Earth My Body chant. The words for that are in your order of service. There are hand motions. I'll demonstrate. When we say Earth My Body, you want to hold your hands
over your lower body.
Water My Blood in the area of your heart. Air My Breath in front of your mouth, and Fire My Spirit, you're actually going to clap in front of your third eye, so that's in front of your forehead. So I'll do it once so you can get an idea of the tune, and then you can join me three times. Stand as you're willing and able, and get ready to do your hand motions.
Earth my body, water my blood, air my breath, and fire my spirit.
So that's what we're going to do three times, and each of the times is going to be a little faster than the other time because we're raising the power of these energies within ourselves.
Earth my body, water my blood, air my breath and fire my spirit. Earth my body, water my blood, air my breath and fire my spirit. Earth my body, water my blood, air my breath and fire my spirit.
And then another thing that we might do at the beginning of a ritual would be to call upon the god and the goddess. This represents calling on the male and female energy within ourselves, what Jung would call the animus and the anima. This is another way of calling on balanced energy within ourselves as we do the actions of the ritual. Sarah and Tom are going to come up one and then the other and teach you the chant. The words are in the order of service. And then we're going to split the room in half, whichever people in the middle, you can decide which side you're on. And you're going to do the chant as a round. And then just to make things a little more interesting, while you're doing those two chants, I'm going to sneak in another one. The two chants that you're going to be doing, we all come from the sun god, talk about the god as provider of light. Hoof and Horn talks about the god in terms of the power cycles of nature. And then the chant that I'm going to be doing is a goddess chant talking about change. So, Sarah and Tom.
Hello. I want Team Sun God. I want to steal the third group. And we're going to try it once. So I will sing the first line and you all repeat. It's in your order of service. Okay? We all come from the Sun God.
We all come from the Sun God.
And to him we shall return.
And to him we shall return.
Like a spark of flame. Rising to the heavens.
Rising to the heavens.
Okay, good work. Remember, energy raising, so, you know, let it flow.
Okay, and now for the cool people. Just joking. So this is Hoof and Horn, so we'll do the same thing. Hoof and Horn, Hoof and Horn. All that die shall be reborn. Vine and grain, vine and grain. All that falls shall rise again. And we're expecting a lot from the people in the middle, so sing loud.
Okay, so Sarah's going to get you guys started, and then Tom will get you going when the second group needs to start. Oh, and you're going to go through it three times. No, let's just...
Changes. We are changers. Everything we touch can change.
Thank you. night began to play alone. The swan swims so bonny-o. He brought it to her father's hall. Hey, hey, ho, and my bonny girl. And there was the court assembled all. The swan swims so bonny-o. He laid the harp upon a stone. Hey, hey, ho, and my bonny girl. And straight it began to lay alone. The swan swims so bonny-o.
If you're comfortable doing so, please close your eyes and take a deep breath. Let the breath fill your abdomen when you breathe in, and let your abdomen compress when you breathe out. Become aware of what we have been calling in the Paganism 101 class your kinesthetic body, your energy body, the body of remembered and imagined motion, remembered and imagined sensation. You are leaning back against a large, old, strong tree. Feel the support of the rough bark against your back. Lean back and let it hold your weight. Listen to the leaves rustle in the wind and pay attention to any sounds around you. Lean your head back and look up into the branches. Notice the way the branches reach up to the sky, the shapes of the leaves, the color of the sky visible through the gaps in the branches. Rest your head back against the tree. Let the living energy of the tree take in your concerns and distractions as it takes in the carbon dioxide you exhale. While you are resting and letting the tree support you, consider the idea that places have memories. Mountains and valleys, monuments and battlefields, trees and caves. Consider a memory beyond carbon dating and inscriptions on tombstones and the rings of trees, the memory of motion and emotion. Imagine that you can hear and understand the language of the tree behind you. As all ancient trees within the reach of humankind, the tree that supports you has watched the sun rise and set on human triumphs and tragedies. It has watched as humans have put their backs into bending the arc of the moral universe towards justice, and when they have turned their back on that work. If you have ears to hear, listen closely as the tree sings to you of bright days when men and women struggled to bring truth to light, to hold back the night, to join hands to uphold the right. And listen too as it keens of work yet to be done. Is there a note that resonates strongly with you? Is there a measure that reminds you of a song that has been lingering in the back of your mind? A song for which you do not know the end? Hold that melody close. Perhaps it is you who will finish the song. When you are ready, thank the tree for sharing its memories with you. Return to this sanctuary and open your eyes. Good morning. My name is Mary Murphy, and I am the current leader of Mystic Grove, the pagan heathen group of the First Unitarian Church of Orlando. Today, we are celebrating Midsummer, the summer solstice, the day of the year on which we enjoy more hours of daylight than any other. Throughout the world, people of different cultures celebrate this day of longest light in a variety of ways, with festivals and bonfires, divination and flowers. When I celebrate it, one of the things that strikes me is the idea of all that light. Sometimes that reminds me of the sun's literal powers of life and death, how it fuels photosynthesis to feed the world one moment and scorches a desert the next. At other times, it inspires me to think of the more metaphorical meanings. Meanings of light like hope and truth and conviction. So thinking metaphorically, I'd like you to consider for a moment the idea of the longest day as a moment of reaching a peak of light and what that light might inspire you to celebrate. Let me start our pondering process by looking at the symbolism of the tarot card, the sun. A version of which I have propped here on the sunflowers. The sun card represents the source of life, the celebration of successes, reaching a high point of performance. But digging deeper, it can represent the striving for light, the process of perception by which we learn to see the light of truth, and the self-confidence and motivation that are sparked by bright truths. In interpersonal relationships, that glow can manifest itself in potent generosity, the power to give without using yourself up. Thinking in terms of the elements we called upon earlier, this is our fire, the energy that powers our joy in life, that sparks our creativity, that fuels the courage of our conviction. This is the energy that evokes heroes. Hero is a weighty word that may summon images of demigods with supernatural powers, but from an etymology perspective, hero comes from a root that means to watch over or protect. Heroes take care of their communities. If we think back to the guided meditation and the memory of the trees, Any tree that looked over one of the buildings that has served as a sanctuary for this congregation would have seen many a hero. Such a tree would have sung to us of our ancestors working for women's voting rights, for peace, for the environment, for the end of nuclear testing, care for the mentally ill, racial equality, gay rights, and many, many more causes. Such a tree would have watched as our congregation offered welcome space for other organizations to pursue their truths. Civil rights organizations, a support group for people with HIV, the Delta Youth Alliance, the Metropolitan Community Church, the Wiccan Religious Cooperative of Florida. Such a tree would continue to add verses to her song today, verses about some of the work our social justice champions have been pursuing this year. Those champions have educated us about and advocated for adoption by gays in Florida. They have supported and rallied with the coalition of Immokalee workers in Lakeland and Tampa. They have supported comprehensive immigration reform. And again, go talk to Samuel if you want to hear more about immigration reform. They have supported the Broadcast Blues Media Reform Tour. They have helped us to learn to support the UUA's Standing on the Side of Love campaign. They and some of you have sorted food at the Second Harvest Food Bank and provided the Lake Apopka Memorial Quilt Organization with the opportunity to tent at the Orlando Earth Day Festival. They have encouraged us to share the plate with a number of worthy organizations. Yet that same tree would keen for causes that still need the work of our hands. Because in our world, no magic harps bring truth to light. Too few feel free to shout out when the emperor is strolling down the road in his undies. Today, some of the members of Mystic Grove are going to celebrate some lights that are shining brightly and bring some darker truths to light. Tom Cook is going to start by telling you a bit about the Mystic Grove. I can say as one of the founding members that one of the lights I celebrate today is the invaluable gift of one you support of our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Tom.
Good morning. 18 years ago this month, I started attending this church. It was suggested I do so by my friend Mary Murphy. But I already knew about First Unitarian through my involvement in the local pagan communities, Wiccan Religious Cooperative of Florida, or WRCF. They held rituals and classes at the church and even rented a room for an office. At the time, I was the membership coordinator for WRCF, and was active enough that I had a key to open First Unitarian's Fellowship Hall. So I knew that this church was somehow pagan-friendly, but that was the first I'd ever heard of a church being cool with paganism. So I started attending, and I liked it. Mary wasn't the only pagan already here, and there were Buddhist and Hindu-oriented people as well. The minister then, the Reverend Dr. Marnie Harmony, was comfortable with paganism as well, a point demonstrated by the fact that a year after I joined the church, she invited me to make suggestions about the winter solstice service held every year. That was how the annual spiral dance was created. So fast forward to 2001. As I'm sure you all know, it was a strange autumn. Around the church, things weren't really all that different than usual, but Sunday attendance was way up, and we had a much larger new member group that October. A good percentage of that new member group was pagan or pagan-friendly. Mary and I were basically the two most visible pagans in the church at this point. We used to laugh about that at the time. Anytime a visitor mentioned the P word at church, the person would be taken directly to one of us. I suppose it was for good reason, since I had led classes in paganism, we had both led pagan services, and we had been holding occasional rituals and bonfires for people who were interested. The fall new member class introduced or coincided with a pagan service led by Mary entitled Reclaiming Samhain. After the new member class, Reverend Marnie suggested that Mary and I get with the pagans in the class as they were interested in forming a pagan affinity group. That was the beginning of the Mystic Grove. There wasn't a fuss about the creation of the Mystic Grove concerning the church in general. Our minister was supportive, and I know the Board of Trustees didn't have any issues, as I was a member of the board at the time. This was not the case with all Unitarian Universalist churches, however. Over the years, I have learned of churches that weren't pagan-friendly or even pagan-tolerant. And then there were the churches which had pagan groups where most of all or all of the members weren't active in the church in general, essentially a separate group within the church. In contrast, the Mystic Grove's relationship with our church has been significantly different. Grovers, as we tend to call ourselves, have served on the board of the church, served as chairs of committees, taught religious education, and one even served on the search committee to find our new minister, Reverend Kathy. The Mystic Grove has led several Sunday services, such as this one, and all our events and classes are open to church members and friends, as well as the general public. Within a few years, we had bylaws and officers, or as we tended to call them, ossifers. We are quite pleased of the relationship between the Grove and the church. After nearly a decade, it can be said that the Mystic Grove is confirmation that First Unitarian and its members practice what they preach when it comes to acceptance, personal growth, and community building. Let me give you two examples of how the Grove has benefited from this interaction and has been able to pay it forward, so to speak. The first is about 7 years ago, the Grove began reaching out to the Florida Unitarian Universalist community by leading worship services at other churches. So far, we've led seven of them in cities such as St. Augustine, Vero Beach, and Tarpon Springs. In these services, which in some instances are the first time churchgoers have heard about contemporary paganism, Grovers typically share personal narratives and beliefs, as well as music and traditional stories. We love doing this outreach as it not only allows us to share about our faith, but we get to represent First Unitarian. The second item is service to the larger pagan community of Central Florida. In our beginning, since our beginning 10 years ago, we have had a connection with the local community. Grovers have served on the board of WRCF, and we have sponsored regular meetings and classes with them. Through our connection with WRCF, pagans have learned about and even joined the church. The Grove is also the host of the annual Orlando Pagan Pride Day. This October will be the third year the event is held on our property, and as of last year, a Grover is the coordinator for the event. Orlando Pagan Pride Day is connected with a series of over 120 international events. The express reason for pagan pride is the same as for gay pride, that is, to encourage a more public face for pagans. Our event is open to the general public and will be promoted at local businesses as well as by press release. It is safe to say that the Grove and the local pagan community would not be where they are today without the positive influence and substantial help of the First Unitarian Church of Orlando. And the Grovers are excited to be able to celebrate its first 10 years during our church's upcoming centennial year. Thank you.
Next, Leslie Horworth, who is that Orlando Pagan Pride coordinator, is going to tell you a little bit more about that event.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Leslie Horworth, and I am a member of First U and of the Mystic Grove, and this will be my second year as the Orlando Central Florida event coordinator for National Pagan Pride Day. First Unitarian, as Tom said, will be hosting the event on October 8th. I briefly wanted to speak today about the upswing in the amount of pagans, the pagan community, the movement, and the reasons behind Pagan Pride Day. Neo-paganism, as it's often referred to, or new paganism, is a broad term covering contemporary practice of many nature-based spiritual paths. Some neo-pagan traditions are reconstructions of pre-Christian pagan religions. Others base practices on ancient pantheons newly interpreted for the modern world. Neo-pagans can be polytheists, honoring more than one deity, and others may be monists, believing that the many gods and goddesses are simply an aspect of a single source. Some may be solitary practitioners, while others belong to an organized church. There's a huge diversity in beliefs within the neo-pagan movement. Probably the best known are those who consider themselves as Wiccan or witches. But there are also Asatru, based on the ancient Nordic deities, Druids, Kemetic, which follow the Egyptian gods, Gaians, who follow a ecological spirituality, and those who follow Greco-Roman, Native American, and Celtic traditions. There are some that call themselves kitchen witches, or green witches, or just classify themselves as being pagan. There are many other groups of varying sizes and practices. What they all share is a reverence for nature's ever-returning cycles, a spirit of community among individual diversity, and a search for personal truth. It is currently believed that there are between 500,000 and 2.5 million practitioners in the United States. This number can be hard to determine because many neo-pagans, fearing discrimination or reprisals, tend to keep their practices quiet. Many use their craft names within groups to protect themselves on the outside. In the American Religious Identification Survey, which is conducted by the City University of New York about every 10 years, people are asked to classify themselves by their religious identification. They're not given a list that says, are you one of these? They're basically just asked, what do you consider yourself? In 1990, the survey reported that there were approximately 8,000 people surveyed that identified themselves as being Wiccan. There were basically no other groups that reported in any number at that time. By 2001, about 10 years later, the survey found that people were now considering themselves to be Wiccan, Druid, or Pagan. The number within that 10-year had grown from that 8,000 to now 425,000 people that considered themselves to be some flavor of pagan, if you will. The interesting thing that I found within the survey when they came up with this count was they counted the people who said they were Wiccan, they counted the people who said they were Druids, they counted the people that considered themselves just pagan, and they also threw in 19% of the UUs because they figured that the UU census says that 19% of the people within the church consider themselves being of earth-based religions. So how do we come to Pagan Pride Day? I'm going to read you the statement by Selena Dwar, who was one of the organizers of Pagan Pride. It'll give you a little bit of background in her feelings on the subject. Why Pagan Pride? Job discrimination. Difficulties with landlords, neighbors. Harassment, up to and including assault and battery. Parents disowning their children. Family members turning away. Parents losing their children in divorce cases because of their beliefs. Sound familiar? Unfortunately, it does to many people, and each issue listed above is too often faced daily by people of different sexual orientations and different religious beliefs. Like gays, lesbians, and bisexuals, pagans cannot always live their lives openly and honestly because of the fear that surrounds them, because the issues and goals are similar. To reduce societal xenophobia until no one needs to hide their difference, whether that be he loves or who he worships. When I wanted to start a movement to promote understanding and acceptance of pagan spiritualities, the phrase pagan pride came immediately to mind. Far from trying to either steal from or invalidate gay pride, pagan pride owes a deep debt of gratitude to the gay pride movement for its achievements. We hope we can improve attitudes toward earth-based spiritual practices as much as gay pride has towards sexual orientations. Through our information resources, public events, media contacts, we hope to challenge intolerance through education. We wish not only to reduce discrimination against us, but to present the value of our past can bring to society, while emphasizing that we do not seek converts, but ask that each person honor the divine in the manner that is best for him. Major corporations are adding diversity statements and programs to their human resources areas. They aren't just being tolerant, they are learning to value plurality of opinion, background, and viewpoint, especially in an increasingly global community. And there are still people who would never make a racial slur or discriminate based on gender, but who still discriminate on the basis of religion because they believe there is only one valid religion, or because they simply are misinformed about other religious practices. Too often, valuable contributions are ignored because of misunderstandings, mistaken beliefs that pagans sacrifice people or animals, that pagans practice nothing serious but wild orgies and debauchery, that pagans are out to steal souls. In fact, members of the modern pagan and neo-pagan religions tend to value ecology as an extension of their view of Earth, as sacred and all life is interconnected, hold a paradigm that embraces plurality, supports civil rights and advocates personal freedom, holds ethical standards that require personal responsibility, as well-read and interested in learning, focus on self-help, emotional, psychological growth, and be keenly aware of each other's right to believe as he chooses, believing that to impose one's belief on another is harmful. While some people feel that the phrase pagan pride is too confrontational, the result accomplished through the word pride in the gay lesbian community states to me that it is an effective phrase to communicate how we feel. We will not hide in the shadows any longer, practicing our spirituality privately because we fear reprisals from members of monotheist religions. We are not ashamed of the gods we reverence and the way we celebrate. We are coming out of the broom closet. Ours is not a path for everyone. We encourage to practice what spirituality you will, but now we claim the right to take pride in what we practice. So, what do we do on Pagan Pride Day? Well, we basically take over the church. We have events planned for the entire day. There will be vendors with crafts. We'll have readers. There's information booths and practitioners of Reiki. You can get your chakras aligned. You can hang out in the Bardic Circle and listen to music and stories. There will be a meditation grove where we will lead a public ritual, and there will be guided meditations throughout the day. We will have food and drink available. There will be workshops and speakers running most of the day and an activity area for the children. Everyone who brings a non-perishable food item for the Second Harvest Food Bank will receive a raffle ticket. And our vendors love to give us things to give away, so we do raffle them at the end of the day. All in all, it's a fun-filled day with great things to do. Admission's free, so we encourage you to stop on and see what we're doing. Thank you.
Next, I have a few words to read from Carrie Mendick, who is one of our Mystic Grove members who happens to be at GA. She wrote to me that she had actually started being involved with social justice and human rights when she was in her 20s, writing letters on behalf of political prisoners, and ended up actually deciding to be a prisoner pen pal. And in that process, she met her late husband, Todd, and in that pen pal process, she learned about paganism. And this is what she said. My husband Todd was incarcerated on Florida death row. He was a pagan and followed a ceremonial path. Paganism is slowly growing throughout prisons across the U.S., including in Florida, even though this is theoretically the Bible Belt. Not all chaplains embrace diversity with religious paths. 10 years ago, the chaplain did not even want to put on Todd's file that he was neo-pagan. The prison guards were afraid of the runic pentacle I bought for him, and those were one of the few personal items that I received back from the prison after Todd died of brain cancer. Todd was restricted, residing on death row, and while I could mail him books, he had no tools. Tools within paganism are exactly that, tools to handle work in ritual. His rituals were solitary, and without those tools, he honed his meditation and energy work to be able to do rituals with nothing. His goals, while we were married, were to protect me in whatever way he could. So he would work energy and make me talismans and amulets out of paper with plain designs. Inmates do not have access to bookstores or computers. If they are mailed books, they can receive them provided they are paperback. It is very difficult to find pagan chaplains to assist. Usually when an inmate wants to research paganism, they first think of Wicca. So even in my position with the WRCF and the Orlando Pagan Collective, we hear from inmates who want to learn about Wicca. I have mailed books to chaplains upon request, and we are receiving more requests from Florida chaplains. They understand that their job as a chaplain is to help all. The only problem is that there are not very many chaplains who are willing to do this, and no correspondence courses that inmates could study. And she goes on to mention that through the UUA and the Church of the Larger Fellowship, there is a ministry that is offered to Church of the Larger Fellowship prisoner members, and those people as well are always grateful if they can be sent any materials. So this is part of Carrie's personal justice work that she continues to be involved in, allowing prisoners to continue to practice their religious freedom as prisoners of more mainstream religions freely can. And then our last speaker is Chip Dockery.
Hello, folks. I'm Chip Dockery. There's enough people that have come into the church since I came, so I'll go ahead and give a brief introduction. I have been known and identified to myself, finally found out who I was after many, many years, as a kind of a neglected Wiccan sort of pagan for some 20-something years, 19. However, I also spent 21 years as a regular officer in the United States Air Force as a fighter pilot. And I bring this up for a particular reason. As in that capacity as a regular officer, something a lot of people don't know, up until age 65, I was not really retired. I was receiving reduced pay for reduced services and was subject to recall by the Secretary of Defense at his pleasure. I was required to keep a uniform ready to go in the closet at all times, and it's still there. Why do I bring this up? My subject is paganism in the U.S. military. It is growing. It's growing a lot. And we're having the same difficulties there that other minorities have had throughout the rest of American society. Paganism was recognized by the U.S. government in 1975. And shortly after that, the military chaplaincy got a synopsis of what is this Wiccan pagan thing into their books, and they did a pretty good job of a snapshot of late 70s Wicca. They did a pretty good job of that, but that's well out of date now. In 2001, a revised edition of the U.S. Air Force personnel data system did include several different sorts of Wicca, Gardnerian Wicca, Dianic Wicca, Sax Wicca, shamanism, and they are working on to working to include others. I think Asatru, the Norse paths, have now been included in that data system. In 2007, after 10 years of dragging his feet, the VA did authorize the use of a pentagram on tombstones for fallen American service people who were of pagan faith. And that was due primarily to the work of Roberta Stewart, whose husband, Sergeant Patrick Stewart, had died in combat in Afghanistan, and they went through all kinds of stuff getting the VA to approve something without a cross on it for his services and his funeral. The struggle goes on there. Legally, theoretically, pagans in the military have got the same rights as anybody else, but as anybody of any minority group can tell you, be it racial minority or sexual orientation minority or anything like that, what's written on the law book does not necessarily translate into what you live with day to day. There have been instances of harassment. There have been instances of vandalism of pagan sites. There have been denial of services and space that they should have been allowed on base. And in one case, Army Chaplain Don Larson had applied to become the first official Wiccan chaplain in the U.S. military. His request was denied, and he was summarily dismissed from the chaplaincy. No good reason given. I guess they were afraid he would rock the boat. The same identical forces, politically, religiously, that are aligned against our pagan people in the military are the same identical forces, politically and religiously, that are aligned against the people involved with sexual orientation equality, the people involved in racial equality, the people involved in immigration equality, the people that are involved in social justice all across the scale. It's the same fight. That's why I bring it to a church that normally doesn't deal with much military stuff. This is under most people's radar. It's certainly under our radar, but it is very important. In my judgment, which when I get into this sort of subject, kind of like the emperor's new clothes that we saw, I invisibly put that uniform back on. I invisibly go back to the professional military man that's kind of like once a Marine, always a Marine. It is in the best interest of our country. It is in the best interest of our U.S. military. It is in the best interest of the society in which we all live that these people be allowed to practice can help. That is briefly what I wanted to just get you up to speed on. If you have any questions on it or any further information you'd like, please contact me after the service. Thank you.
So since we're running over, we're going to jump right into thanking the elements and opening the circle and extinguishing the challenge.
Power of air, thank you for bringing clarity to our celebration. Blessed be.
Power of fire, thank you for bringing enthusiasm to our celebration. Blessed be.
Power of water, thank you for bringing joy to our celebration. Blessed be.
Power of Earth, thank you for bringing balance to our celebration. Blessed be.
The circle is open but unbroken. May the peace of the cosmos be ever in your hearts. Merry meet and merry part until merry we meet again. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.